Vandasha, Gananjana, Shilakya, Chakshur, Meritam, Yena Tasmai, Shikarveda Maha. So Jagadish Pandit in Krishna Leela and his brother Hiranya were two of the Naga Padmis. And Naga Padmi means the snake ladies, the wives of the Kaliya serpent. And of course they were great devotees. The Naga Padmis were such great devotees that they saved their husband, the Kaliya serpent, from devastation, from being killed by Krishna. And there's many pastimes that Jagadish and Hiranya had with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One of the first pastimes I heard was the pastime where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on a Kadashi was begging for the grains that were being offered to the deities at Jagadish and Hiranya's house. And, of course, we do offer grains to the deities, but we don't take grains. But if a child, as they say, 8 to 80, if a child is below the year 8 years of age, then he doesn't have to follow Kadasi. And if he's, of course, a child is not more than 80, but if a person is more than 80, he doesn't have to follow a Kadasi. So those of you who are getting close to that age, like me, you're just looking forward. Anyway. And so Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was crying. He says, I want to eat the food that is being cooked by Hiranya and Govardhan. And everybody thought, you know, this child, you know, what is he doing? You know, how does he know? Or what is he talking about? And so they brought him over to Hiranya and Govardhan's house. And indeed, there were all these offerings, and he ate those offerings. And that's one interesting story. Another story is that Lord Chaitanya ordered Jagadish to go to Jagannath Puri and preach about the glories of Lord Jagannath. So what happened is he went to Jagannath Puri and started preaching, and then he came back with some Jagannath deities, and he used to carry these Jagannath deities around on a stick. I guess, you know, either like on either side or somehow or other carrying around on a stick. And this stick is still worshipped today as the stick in which he carried around the Jagannath deities. And there's another interesting story about Jagadish Pandit's wife, Dukini Devi. It's interesting how sometimes people have the name like Duki Krishna Das or Dukini. Of course, Krishna gets rid of all the dukkha. Just like we have one devotee, one of my goddesses, Dukkha Hunchi, that means someone who destroys the dukkha or the unhappiness in this world. And that's Krishna. So, anyway, so his Dukini wife, his wife named Dukini. I gotta be careful. So Dukini, it's described that she actually carved the deities of Gaura Gopal, and she worshipped these deities. And it's also interesting, too, that in regard to the present-day chauvinism we experience, that's in India, the ladies are not allowed, in ISKCON at least, or at least the Gaudiya temples, the ladies are not allowed to do deity worship. And this is not in the line of what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did. He allowed the ladies even to do deity worship of his own deities. You know, what to speak of other deities. And, you know, Janavamata, she was installing deities during the festival of Kateri. So Dukini Devi. Oh. Well, you're not watching on TV today. So Dukini Devi, she actually worshipped and installed the deities of Gaura Gopal, was worshipping. A very, very nice story. Let's see, the 13th day after the full moon, the month of Posha, marks the passing of Jagadish Pandit Prabhu. So today is his disappearance day. So, and today is also the disappearance commemoration of Srila Jiva Goswami. So I'm going to speak a little bit about Jiva Goswami. So Jiva Goswami, of course, was the nephew of Sanatan and Rupa Goswamis. And he was born, or his father's name was Anupama. And Anupama, of course, was the brother of Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. And his actually father passed away at a very early age. So he was basically left without his father. And ultimately he took shelter of Rupa and Sanatana Goswami in Vrindavan. So as a baby, he had darshan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it's described that Jiva Goswami had golden complexion, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srila Prabhupada also had golden complexion. Those of us who saw Srila Prabhupada, I'm actually the first time I saw Srila Prabhupada, that evening he was just sitting on his bed wearing a gamsha, you know, came up just like above the knee, and his body was golden. I mean, really was. I mean, not like this color. When we talk about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's color being golden, it's not that it was reflective golden, but it was like the molten gold, like a darker gold color. And that was Srila Prabhupada's color too. So anyway, so Jiva Goswami had a golden complexion, and he worshipped Radha Krishna deities from his very birth. This is one of the signs of someone who's a Nitya Siddha devotee, you know, someone who was an eternally liberated associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, and he had dreams of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. And he dreamt of dancing with them. And in those dreams and in his life, he felt great separation from his father, who was a great devotee of the Lord, of course, a great devotee of Lord Ramchandra. And then he went to Navadvip to see Lord Nityananda. And the next day, he met at Lord Nityananda Srivas Thakur's house, and he was fed by Sachi Mata. And after this, Lord Nityananda took him around Navadvip and showed him all the various places of pilgrimage, all the various places of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. So he was personally instructed by Lord Nityananda. Then he was sent by Lord Nityananda to Kashi. So someone may inquire, why was he sent to Kashi? Because Kashi generally is a place of impersonalists, Mayavadis. But in Kashi, there was this a very wonderful scholar named Madhusudana Vachaspati, who was a disciple of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And so he took instruction in Sanskrit grammar, rhetoric, and all those other things, logic, which was very important because Lord Nityananda understood what Jiva Goswami would be doing later on in life, so it was very important for him to get this instruction in the aspects of language and philosophy that would help him later on compose his great works, the Sandarbhas. So then he was sent to Vrindavan to associate with Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. And he was given the deity to worship, because we know Jiva Goswami worshiped the deity of Radha Damodar, but he was given this deity of Radha Damodar by Rupa Goswami. And this deity, it's described, was actually fashioned by Rupa Goswami. In other words, designed or whatever. Of course, Rupa Goswami didn't do the molten work or the marble work. And working with Rupa Goswami, he acted as Rupa Goswami's menial servant and proofread many of the books of Srila Rupa Goswami, such as the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and others. And he rendered menial service to Rupa and Sanatana. Eventually, he accepted Rupa Goswami as his guru. And so he took initiation from Rupa Goswami. And what happened is that once upon a time, in one of these famous stories, there was this conquering Digvijay, Rupa Narayana was his name, who came to Vrindavan. He was interested in attaining or obtaining what's called a Jayapatra. Jayapatra means a certificate of victory. Jaya means victory. Patra means like a leaf. So in those days they didn't go to the to Walmart and buy, you know, some paper. They just used leaves. And of course it's described that Rupa Goswami's writing, Lord Chaitanya said it was just like pearls on a thread. And there's some pictures of it. You can actually go on the internet and see Rupa Goswami's palm leaves in which he wrote. And it's so beautiful, the script of Srila Rupa Goswami. But it's a funny thing that Prabhupada said. Prabhupada said, basically, nobody knows how to write Hindi nicely. Because one devotee said, I don't have good script. And Prabhupada said, nobody has good Hindi script. But actually, Rupa Goswami had very nice Devanagari script. So when he was doing that, anyway, so this Rupa Narayana came and he wanted to establish his superiority as a rhetorician, logician. And so he was challenging everybody, and then he went to Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. And he said to Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, I challenge you, and Rupa and Sanatan Goswami were not interested in debating with him. They thought, it was a useless waste of time. So they agreed to sign this Jayapatra that he has won, that Rupa Narayana has won, and we have lost just to get rid of the guy. So this is an interesting strategy. So they did that, and Rupa Narayana was going around. God, this is getting, what's this scotch tape? So Rupa Narayana was going around bragging, I have defeated Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. And so eventually he said that to Srila Jiva Goswami. Srila Jiva Goswami could not tolerate hearing that his uncles had been defeated. He knew they hadn't been defeated, but tolerate hearing the criticism of his uncles or the minimization of his uncle's ability. And so he said, I'll challenge you to a debate. You ready? And so they debated for 7 days. And it's described that basically he had a call of nature, Rupa Narayan. He was so, embarrassed that he had been defeated, just like so shocked that he had been defeated that he couldn't control his... he couldn't control something. I'm not going to describe that. Bhagavatam class. And then Jiva Goswami, he was very happy that he had defeated Rupa Narayan. So we went to Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, and he said to Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, I defeated him. And he was sort of bragging about it. And of course, some people try to find fault in Srila Jiva Goswami. This is a pastime. And so Rupa Goswami told Srila Jiva Goswami that you have taken sannyas at too early an age. Therefore, you have no business living in Vrindavan. And actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that when one goes to Vrindavan, one should stay at most a fortnight, that's 2 weeks. Because after a while, you begin to take Vrindavan for granted, or the residents of Vrindavan for granted, and you may commit offenses and not properly respect the residents of Vrindavan. One has to be very, very careful. Even Jagadananda Pandit was advised by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, only stay a short time because he would not properly understand the mood of the residents of Vrindavan. I mean, it's very interesting. When you go to Vrindavan, because I have quite a few friends who are Brajavasis because I stay in Govardhan. Actually, there's more Brajavasis in Govardhan than there are in the city of Vrindavan, which is interesting because many of the people in Vrindavan have come there, immigrated from Bengal and other places in order to do business, especially rickshaw business. Practically all the rickshaw wallahs are actually Bengalis. And they're not originally born in Vrindavan. But in Govardhan, the majority of people are actually born Vrajavasis. And it's interesting, they don't really get along that well with the Bengalis. There's some conflict at that particular point. At least some are Bengalis. But the Brajavasis, it's very interesting. I mean, generally they don't chant any regulated number of rounds on their beads or anything like that. But Krishna's with them. He's their friend. I talked to them. They said, don't you chant? He said, Krishna's our friend. I think, Hare Krishna. If someone in the Krishna consciousness movement, a Westerner said that, I'd say, you are a sahaja. But if the Brajavasis say that, it's actually true. I mean, they're born playing with Krishna. Like that story of the Mathura Brahmin, the Chobe family, they were playing with the deity as one of their children. That was Madan Gopal, later became known as Madan Mohan. And Sanatan Goswami sort of like corrected them, and Krishna got angry that he corrected them. Krishna said, why did you correct them and tell them to worship me and put me on the altar? Because I was having so much fun. Yeah, this deity was actually sitting. Was actually sitting at the dinner table with the family. In other words, that's how the deity was offered food. And none of you should do that particular thing. Anyway, came back to the story. So Rupa Goswami, he banished Jiva Goswami. He said, you cannot live in Vrindavan. You're not qualified. You're not mature enough. You took sannyas too early enough. So it's described that he lived in the hollow of a tree in Mathura for about a year. And then Sanatana Goswami was wondering, you know, why is he being punished so severely? So he went to Rupa Goswami, and Sanatana Goswami is Rupa Goswami's guru, in a sense, instructing guru, because actually they were both initiated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he said to him, you're not following one of Lord Chaitanya's precepts. And Rupa Goswami was thinking, you know, what precept is he talking about? You know, I'm following all the angas of bhakti, the 64 angas. And then Sanatana Goswami said, you know, think about all the angas. And Rupa Goswami went through all the angas and he came to Jivadoya. Jivadoya means be merciful to the jiva souls, for the, to the tatashta jiva souls. But it also can be indicates being merciful to Jiva Goswami. So Rupa Goswami understood that. He called Jiva Goswami back. And therefore, Jiva Goswami again resided in Vrindavan. There's another criticism sometimes that offenders utilize when they're talking about Jiva Goswami. They say Jiva Goswami, he only taught Swakya Bhav and not Parakya Bhav. But actually, if we read Jiva Goswami's books, especially the Gopal Champa, which I'm working on right now, that he does actually deal with Parakya Bhav. But generally, he stressed, or let me explain what Parakya is versus Swakya. Swakya means Radha and Krishna are married. Or Krishna's married to Rukmini and all the other wives. So dealing with Krishna as a married person. And in fact, there were several marriages conducted in Vrindavan. And one place was Gantoli, where Radha and Krishna's dress was tied together, ganta. Ganta means like a knot, they're tied together. And there are several places. If you do the Braj Mandal Parikrama, there was another place where Lord Brahma performed the marriage ceremony of Radha and Krishna in secret. And the demigods came down to witness it. But actually, Radha and Krishna are not married. Because if they weren't actually married, then all the suspense and, you know, 90% of the interesting things that occur in the Radha and Krishna's pastimes could not have occurred. You know, the jealousy, all those other things. Of course, it's also interesting that when, before Radharani was married to her so-called husband, Abhimanyu, Yashoda Mai sort of engaged her with Krishna. She put like turmeric on her hands, saying that you're going to be Krishna's wife. You know that story? She put turmeric. And then Radharani got so embarrassed that she washed the turmeric off her hands. This is a place called Pilu Kund. And this kund is still yellow from this turmeric. It's right near Varshana. So she washed the turmeric off her hands. She was so embarrassed. But actually, she was promised to Krishna. And actually, this Abhimanyu, he wasn't actually, let's see, in a real sense, married to Krishna. He never, to Radha. He never even came close to her. There's so many stories told by the Goswamis. But Srila Jiva Goswami stressed this Swakya Bhav, which means the married relationship, because his disciples were not advanced enough. Many of his disciples, not all of them, were not advanced enough to understand Parakya Bhav. And that's also quite interesting, because if you think about it, that these disciples were in Vrindavan. And they were disciples, they were great devotees of Jiva Goswami. I mean, imagine the benediction of being a disciple of Jiva Goswami. That's a pretty high position. So then we contrast that with some of us, you know, ISKCON members, who generally we think we're so advanced, isn't it? We just rush up to try to understand the Parakeya Bhava of Radha and Krishna. And Prabhupada, would oftentimes recite this Bengali poem that said, big big monkey, big big belly, sail and jumpy, melancholy, which refers to someone who tries to imitate Hanuman, who jumped to Ceylon or Sri Lanka. But when we imitate someone like Hanuman, guess what happened? We fall on our belly. We may have a big belly. What was it? Big, big monkey, big, big belly. Ceylon jumping, melancholy. Melancholy means depressed or, you know, sad, like that. So if you try to jump to Ceylon, you become sad. In other words, if you try to jump to a higher platform, a higher platform than which you have an adhikar or a right. Adhikar means like having a right. It's like, you know, grahasas are called adhikar. So if you do that, then you'll just fall flat on your face spiritually. So Srila Jiva Goswami understood that and therefore stressed the swati above. And that, and just like you see Prabhupada, let's talk about Prabhupada now. So Prabhupada talked primarily about, you know, the Sambandha Gyan. You know, if you hear his lectures, Sambandha and Abhideya, and very little about Prayojana. Because he understood that we weren't ready. I mean, here at the lecture, he repeats the same thing over and again. You're not the body. You have to surrender to Krishna. You know, basic ABC philosophy. And devotees are wondering, why is he doing that? Because that's our adhikar. And you hear in the Jiva Dharma, when Vijay Kumar and Vrajanath, they approach Babaji Maharaj, and they ask him, what is our adhikar? And he explains, your adhikar is to perform Vaidhi Bhakti. And later on, you'll be able to hear about Raghunuga Bhakti. Of course, for them, later on came pretty quickly. Like we were talking about before, you compress the time. Like that, it's not that like in 30 days or less, you can experience Raghunuga Bhakti. I wish it was so easy like that. Anyway, so that's why Jiva Goswami instructed primarily the swaki, or the married relationship of Radha and Krishna. And Jiva Goswami also preached to the Muslim emperor, who was Akbar at that time. Akbar, of course, was a very open person. He was very much interested in bringing all the religions together. It's described that he would have meetings with the different religious leaders and try to come up with, you know, with something that they could all agree with. Something that they, because people were fighting. I mean, the Muslims, of course, particularly the Mughal Muslims, and their specific type of Muslim, they were fighting with the Hindus, and the Brahmanas were fighting with, were not fighting, but discriminating against the Shudras, and, you know, and the Parsis, and, you know, everybody, they just didn't get along. So Akbar was trying to get everybody together. And so we would have extensive theological, philosophical discussions with different religious leaders. And also, he met with Srila Jiva Goswami, and he went to this place in Vrindavan, which is called Nidiban. Nidiban means the forest of sleeping. I think some of you have gone to Braj, who have gone to Nidiban. Nidiban is where you... There's a temple at the far end of Nidiban which has a bed in it, and Radha and Krishna are sleeping in the bed. Anyone's been there?
Yes.
You've been there. Some of you, that's Nidiban. And it's quite a wonderful place. Very, very peaceful place in Vrindavan, in the town of Vrindavan. So anyway, so he went to Nidiban and he had a discussion with Akbar, and he gave Akbar a vision. It's called a spurti. That word is used in the Jiva Dharma quite a bit, isn't it? Spurti means, basically in Sanskrit, it means a manifestation. Not just you see something, but it's a whole manifestation. You hear something. So it's, in other words, it's a complete sensory experience. You hear something, you feel something, you even smell something, taste something, all that. That's what a spurti is. It's a manifestation, not just a vision. There's a difference between spurti and a vision. So anyway, so he gave Akbar a spurti, a vision, or a manifestation, and Akbar became so much, let's say, overwhelmed by this vision and by the association of Jiva Goswami, that Akbar helped Jiva Goswami construct many of the temples in Vrindavan and finish many of the temples, the Goswami's temples, because it was because of Jiva Goswami that these temples got constructed. I mean, there was help from other people, of course, Sanatana Goswami and the salt merchant. There's many stories like that. But it was Akbar who facilitated at least getting some of the building materials. Because even when Prabhupada was present, it was so difficult to get building materials like cement, for example. The devotees had to go personally and test the quality of cement. Sometimes they would just give them sand as cement, and the building would, of course, or whatever they were making, would fall apart. And it's described the devotees, when they got cement, real cement, they would actually sleep on top of the truck as the truck was transporting the cement to the building site, to Vrindavan especially. And they would guard it because people would steal cement. It was as good as gold. And the government was rationing cement at that particular time. So then he had a debate. Another story is he had a debate in Agra, and he established that there was a debate of which is more glorious, the Yamuna or the Ganges. That's a pretty ecstatic debate to have. So it came out, of course, he proved that the Yamuna was more important, because the Yamuna is the consort of Krishna. So he made Akbar promise never to hunt in Vrindavan, which is quite good, because the kings and the emperors, they would hunt. And later on he taught Shyamananda, Narottama Das Thakur, and Srinivas Thakur about philosophy, and gave them books of the Goswamis. There's actually one samadhi it's near Sanatana Goswami, right next to Sanatana Goswami's temple, Madan Mohan Temple. It's called the Granta Samadhi. Anyone seen the Granta Samadhi? It's like a cone where the books of the Goswamis are entombed there it would be good to go in there and get those books out, because I'm sure they're not hermetically sealed. You know, so I'm sure they're not protected, because at that time they didn't have the science of hermetically sealing something. So, I mean, anyway. But of course, it would be considered a sacrilege if we did that. But many of the original books of the Goswamis were entombed there, in that particular Granta Samadhi, which is right next to the Madan Mohan Temple. If you go out down from the Madan Mohan Temple and go to the side, there's a whole Samadhi area there. And then, of course, Jiva Goswami was specifically responsible for worshiping Radha Damodar and establishing the Radha Damodar Temple, and that was the temple at which Srila Prabhupada would stay. That was Srila Prabhupada described the Radha Damodar Temple, and his quarters of the Radha Damodar Temple are his eternal residence. That's his eternal residence. And the devotees are maintaining, of course, there's some legal dispute right now that was started by some devotees, anyway, for some reason, who wanted to control the whole thing. So, basically, but the worship in Srila Prabhupada's rooms is going on. There's an offering made every day, at least one or two offerings made every day. And Srila Prabhupada would sit in the Radha Damodar temple and look at the deities of Radha Damodar and the samadhis there and the Bhajan Kutir Rupa Goswami and derive great inspiration at that temple. Also at the Radha Damodar temple, the other Goswamis would meet regularly to talk about philosophical points. So Chidla Jiva Goswami appeared in the year 1513, and he left this world in the year 1598. So he lived a pretty long life, and he was also responsible in many ways for the renovation of the Radhakund area along with Raghunath Das Goswami. Because it's described that Jiva Goswami was extremely practical in writing down wills and the property documents and everything like that to assure the longevity of the temples. Of course, later on, many of the followers of the Goswamis who had the rights to, let's say, control the temple as trustees, they later on took possession of the temple and used it to maintain their families and even sold some of the properties belonging to the temples, like the whole Loi Bazaar originally belonged to Radha Damodar and some of the other temples around there, and they were sold by the descendants of these original Goswami families, not Goswamis in terms of being in the renounced order, but the families that were called Goswamis, and they sold a lot of those properties, unfortunately. And you see this is a common thing that occurs, that people running the temple after a while begin to think it's their temple. I remember even in ISKCON there was one instance where one person who was in charge of one particular temple wanted to leave the temple to his children when he died. He thought, this would be my children's temple. So this, then also you have the story of Indradyumna Maharaj, not our Indradyumna Maharaj, but Indradyumna Maharaj from the Jagannath pastimes, who prayed to Lord Jagannath that he wouldn't have any children. He begged Lord Jagannath for that benediction because he understood if he had children, the children would want to take possession of the temple. So to this day, the king of Puri is just like a figurehead. He doesn't really control the temple. I mean, unfortunately, in one sense, because he wants to let the Western devotees in the temple. Whereas the Pandas, they don't want us in. They just want to have a special position that only Indians can come to the temple. But the king of Puri is actually quite favorable. We've met him. And he's come to stay in devotees' houses in the United States. He actually stays with one of my friends when he comes to the United States. His name is Shukada. He lives in Philadelphia. And he's also from Orissa. He was born in Orissa. And actually, there's one interesting story talking about Orissa, about my godbrother, Gaur Govinda Maharaj, that Gaur Govinda Maharaj was originally from Orissa. And he was... I heard this last night because I was listening to some pastimes of Srila Prabhupada. He was living as like a Babaji in Vrindavan. And one day he saw this great personality walking along with his disciples in Vrindavan. And who was that great personality? Prabhupada, he said. And he accompanied him, had some discussion with him. And then every day he would go like that. But he wouldn't go into the temple. And then one day he followed him, went into the temple, took darshan, and said basically, I want to surrender to you. And Prabhupada accepted him and gave him initiation and sannyas simultaneously. And so that came about just by seeing Prabhupada on a morning walk. I mean, that's how powerful Prabhupada's association was. That he could make a great devotee like that. I mean, because Gaur Govinda Maharaj is already a devotee. But as a great, he was already a great, devotee. But he became attracted to Prabhupada just by seeing Prabhupada on a morning walk.
It's almost like they were two brothers.
Yeah. It's an amazing story. It's an amazing story. So, yes, a devotee should always be identified as devotees. In other words, sometimes it's not so good just to be in disguise. Anyway, that's not an anti-Krishna West comment. So anyway, so Jiva Goswami, we only have 5 more seconds anyway. So he's famous for composing the Sat Sandarbha, the first part is known as the Tattva Sandarbha. Sat Tattva Sandarbha has been published already. There's six parts of the Sandarbha. The last part is called the Priti Sandarbha. And it's, the first Sandarbha deals with epistemology. You know, how do you know what you know? And later on goes to the highest aspect of love of Radha, between Radha and Krishna. So Jiva Goswami is renowned as the foremost scholar, even in India, amongst Mayavadis. He's known as the foremost scholar of all time. There's the Benares University has a special department for Jiva Goswami. He is the most erudite scholar in the modern age. Okay, on that happy note, we'll see you, Radha Lokananda.